Tango Tango Papa 1884, November 26, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime, or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Nevada, Missouri. So, at first, where was I at? I was up in wherever it was, Iowa maybe. It was in Iowa. At first, they were going to send me, somewhere else. Pick a load up, and then I think it was going to go to maybe back towards Ohio or something. And then they said, no, we have another driver that became available, and we got to get this load moving, which is fine with me. And so then they sent this other load that picked up at Rochester, Minnesota this morning, and then that load delivers to Russellville, Arkansas. Now, I'm not ready to go home yet. I'm taking my vacation next month, and so I'm actually not due home until the 9th. However, since this load takes me right past my house, and it's a drop and hook on the other end in Russellville, Arkansas, I'm gonna tomorrow being Thursday, that's Thanksgiving Day, I will stop by home, and I'll be home tomorrow night, and then I'll take the load on down to Russellville on Friday. So that kind of works out, because I have a number of odds and ends that I need to take care of. If you remember, a few weeks ago I talked about my debit card. The Visa portion of my debit card got compromised, and it had to be canceled. And then the bank issued a new one, mailing it to me at my post office box. And so, in the meantime, I don't have any debit card. The one I have with me is canceled. So I'll be able to get that, and I've got quite a bit of laundry that I need to do, and so I'll take care of that while I'm home tomorrow. Do the laundry, kind of get that out of here, and take care of a few odds and ends, and then be one night at home, and then Friday, as I say, I'll take the load on down to Russellville and stay out until, as I say, I'm due home then on the 9th, and then I'll take my vacation, and I'm scheduled to go back to work, I believe, right before New Year's. So, but it sort of worked out that I would be able to go by home, because I could have continued to simply exist on cash, and as I have been tend not to use the debit card when I'm out on the road. It works out best, I found, if I just use the cash that the company gives me. But there are times when if I fail to get cash, or if I spend more than I thought I was going to, let's say I have to spend it on getting a trailer washed out, or something along those lines, because it is, after all, company money that they're giving me, then there are times when I need the debit card, but so I'll be able to get that, and there are, and after 3 weeks, there are always odds and ends to sort of take care of. And it's, how long's it been? It's been almost a month now. I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look at the exact day I went back to work. But it's been a good 3 weeks anyway, probably pushing 4 weeks. So, but in any case, picked that load up. I'd unloaded at Cedar Falls, Iowa. And then I ended up, I didn't have much time. That was yesterday. I had was very limited on the 70 hours. So I unloaded there at Cedar Falls, and then I went to, there's a, like a Pilot truck stop and a Flying J truck stop near there. And so I went to actually it was a Pilot truck stop. I went there, and that's where I took my break at. And then I, when the break was over early this morning, I left there. It was around probably, 4:30 a.m., somewhere along in that area. Left there this morning and then headed up to Rochester, Minnesota, which was about roughly 124 miles away. And so I got there a little bit after 7, and they loaded the load. The load turned out to be just maybe 6 pallets up in the nose of the trailer, maybe a few more, I don't know, but it's a small, pretty small looking load, and the whole thing only weighed 15,000 pounds, so it's only a part of a load, but sometimes that happens. There are loads like that occasionally. So, didn't take them long to load it, and then I was out of there. But in the meantime, it started, while I was at Rochester, it started spitting just a little bit of snow. And so then as I went south, kind of west a little ways, and then south toward Des Moines, I got into some more snow. A little bit. It never really was enough to make the road slick at all. But they were supposed to have maybe 2 to 3 inches. So it was really, it wasn't much of a snow, and or at least while I was there. So although it was kind of funny, because I did stop at Clear Lake, Iowa, and fill the truck up with fuel, and it was kind of funny to hear the kind of overhear the local people kind of complaining about the snow and as if it was something really bad or whatever. And the people in especially in northern Iowa, they should be prepared for snow. It's kind of like people out in the California desert a number of months ago at the beginning of the summer were complaining. It was actually before the beginning of the summer really hit. They were complaining about heat. You know, you're listening to people that live in the desert complain about heat. It's hot. Well, you're living in the desert. So, but in any case, I was able to just continue pretty much going right on. After I left Clear Lake, I made it right on through Des Moines, and then a little bit of a delay south of Kansas City. There was a there was some kind of a wreck that they were in the process of clearing on that used to be 71, now it's Interstate 49. They were clearing that wreck, and then there was tons of traffic. There was lots of traffic. I think a lot of people took off early today. Probably, I think, I noticed the traffic was starting to pick up around noon. And then after about 12 noon, I noticed that there was more traffic on the highways. And so there were quite a few people, even though that was well before rush hour, before the main part of the rush hour would have started in Kansas City. There was already lots of traffic. Then that was maybe at 3:30, probably around 3:30 p.m. whenever I kind of got caught in the backup. So I was stuck in the backup probably for about 25 minutes. And then I finally got past the, they had moved the, I guess the wreck had happened in the center lane and they'd moved it off to the shoulder, to the breakdown lane. So was able, after got past that, then I was able to speed right back up. And so I made it here to Nevada, Missouri. And so that leaves me, what does the GPS say? 151 miles on at least to home, and then it's probably another from home to Russellville, I think, is probably another, I don't know how many miles, it's not, maybe 100 miles or a little over 100 miles, but I'll do that, or it might not even be that far, but I'll do that on, actually it is over 100 miles, I'll do that on, I guess that would be, as I said, that would be Friday, so, anyway, I have a comment here from Joel, and I listened to the very first part of it, and he's talking about Ferguson, Missouri, and these protests, and all I really have to say about that is that, apart from what I've already said, to reiterate, the people in Ferguson, and of course they're black and they're filled with resentment. They've been, it's really sad because they've been almost bred. It's almost like a puppy mill kind of situation. Living in a city is kind of like, that's sort of like, you know, people like to talk about puppy mills and how bad they are. Well, that's what the ghetto is in the city. It's sort of like a liberal controlling, that's their puppy mill. And so they have their, they breed as many of these people as possible that are, and it doesn't really matter if they're black. They could be white. It's convenient because they're black, because they're sort of self-tagged. If you see someone with dark skin, then oh well, they're easy to pick out. But they could just as easily be have some other skin color or some other differentiating feature. So it's really unfortunate, but they're picked. But there are people, and especially you see it, the phenomenon really happening in cities where they've got this whole section of people living in a, you know, in usually in crime infested areas, where they're a lot of them are getting, you know, on some kind of government handout, and once you have a population started, then it becomes easy. It's easy to maintain because they self-replicate. If you're born into a situation like that, if you're born into one of those families, there's a really good chance that you're going to be browbeaten into thinking the same way. You have to assume the mantle of the groupthink, or you're going to be an outcast. And they're really vicious. They'll call you Uncle Tom, and they'll call you, you're too white, and so on and so forth. There are different, the dynamics are the same for any kind of a group. Sort of a group that's idolizing something. And in this case, you could say, well, they're idolizing sort of the so-called black culture. But they're idolizing, so what do they end up idolizing? They end up idolizing, especially the younger ones, they end up idolizing the stupid hip-hop music and the thug musicians, and they idolize sports, and, you know, as a way to, you know, they're going to become a famous, you know, either, you know, some kind of a get involved in sports and maybe get out of the ghetto or whatever. And, but it's really sad because the their masters, and it's basically their slaves, their masters keep them upset, keep them agitated, keep that, you know, the resentment that that they already have as a group, keep that going, agitate it, and then, you know, give them little handouts. You know, because the more agitated you are, whether you're an individual or you're you're part of a group, the more agitated you are, the more separated you are from who you could be, the more separate you become from your own ability to take care of yourself. And so then they, oh, there, you poor little thing, here, have a handout. It's really pernicious. It's horrible. And as I said before in another podcast, it's the same dynamic that parents end up utilizing to, with maybe they have one kid that is susceptible, and they spoil that kid, and they keep giving the, you know, they'll have, it's very common for parents to have a kid that they keep giving them this and giving them that, and the kid, maybe they become professional, so-called professional students, and they live in the basement, and they can't ever seem to do right, or maybe they end up in jail, and then the parent just keeps trying to keeps giving them handouts, keeps supporting them, and of course in the parent's mind they're just kind of working their fingers to the bone, you know, to try to take care of this poor kid, and you know, they're just beside themselves because the kid's so, you know, the kid's so dysfunctional, and they're the ones that caused it. They're the ones that, if they didn't cause it, they're certainly the ones that are taking advantage of it and keeping it going. But in their own mind, they're like God coming out of heaven to, you know, with the manna to take care of their poor creation. It's really a sick relationship. Perverse. It's a perverted relationship. But what ends up happening is that these people are not civilized. When it comes right down to it, they're not civilized. You're seeing kind of an animal behavior. And the animal behavior has nothing to do with the color of their skin. It has everything to do with the fact that they resent. It has everything to do with the fact that resentment is pounded into them by their parents and the people around them, by the groupthink. And if anybody has any sense that's born into a situation like that, and it doesn't have to be, it doesn't, a ghetto is a more extreme example of it, but we're all subject to being born into imperfect situations. We're all subject to being, you know, to end up hating our parents because our parents failed us somehow. And if you find yourself in that position, and if you're going to mature, if you're going to become, grow up and escape from it, you're not going to escape from it from embracing the anger. You're not going to escape from it by embracing what the group idolizes. You'll never escape from it by embracing the rage against the group demon or demons. And so they just end up being locked in. And that happens to everyone. Everyone that you have resentment, and you think as I've said many times, people have this idea they have this resentment, and maybe they know that they have it and they're kind of proud of it. Or maybe they know that they have it, and then they'll make excuses for it, and, oh, well, I don't do exactly as I should, and or they'll try to turn it around and turn the negative into a positive. And I'm thinking here about, you know, so-called the Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They, you know, they demonize these people that are drinking, but they demonize them, and yet that keeps them locked in. And they think by doing that they're doing something positive, and they're not. In the end, they're not. It's not. And some of them, there have been cases where there was one of them down in Florida that was really heavily involved with, I believe it was the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, was one of the, you know, one of the leaders of the thing, at least in Florida. And they got caught, guess what? They got caught drunk driving. The very thing that they were the head of the organization, and they were doing it. They were engaged in it. You become what you hate, whether you like it or not. All who sin are slaves. Resentment is the sin. You know, and you gonna keep your sin around? Does it benefit you somehow? So anyway, let me go ahead and play Joel's comment. So here is Joel.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. Listening to your latest, because it's so weak. I'm actually waiting for a process to run, and I'm doing some stuff up here in my home office. But tomorrow I'm going to take a half day off. But, you know, you made your comments about Ferguson, and, you know, it just never ceases to amaze me the just stupidity of, you know, the people who just cannot get that violence isn't the way. You know, they'll accuse, you know, these are the same people who will accuse the Ferguson Police Department of brutality, but then, you know, and I don't disagree with you about there being quote unquote paid protesters. I actually believe it's probably a fair combination of the two, but it probably wouldn't take much to, you know, but maybe one or two of the paid ones to stir up a riot in this case. So, you know, the thing I'm just trying to understand here, you know, I know the biggest problem is morality, and that we have one morality, and the people in Ferguson have another. All right. And in a lot of cases, the morality that the people in Ferguson have, in my opinion, are definitely wrong. Because how is additional violence committed by them going to actually be helpful to their situation and to their plight?
Okay, let me interrupt. Now, as far as the violence, they're projecting. Now I'm not saying, you know, there are bad policemen. There certainly, you know, there's always a few bad policemen. Sort of like a wolf in sheep's clothing. If you look in any prison that has any size prison population, there's always a certain percentage of the prison inmates that are former policemen. So it's kind of like the criminal hiding behind the policeman's badge. They're afraid they're going to end up in jail, so they become a policeman. But there is a small, there does tend to be a small percentage that can get violent. And then you can have also with the policemen as a group, they can end up taking on the sort of the policeman group think that the world is out to get them. You know, these bad neighborhoods are out to get them, and these people are just acting irrationally, and they, and of course the policemen are human beings too, and they end up resenting the people that the criminals. They end up resenting the criminals in the community, and they kind of take on a sort of a policeman groupthink, and so if that particular policeman groupthink ends up being sort of more of a we'll show them type of thing, and kind of more of a bullying type of policeman groupthink, you know, kind of bully the, you know, bully them in, bully the criminals into submission type of groupthink, then you can end up with a problem with that, and so you can have a problem, especially in larger of that type of thing, where you have the sort of the bad policeman behavior as part of the policeman groupthink, you know, of a, let's say, a large city police department, and so you can have a problem there. But otherwise, these people in Ferguson, and it happened, if you could look back at the Rodney King riots, back in the Watts riots after the Rodney King thing, you know, in Los Angeles, I guess that was, when was that? Back maybe in the, was that in the late 80s? I can't remember, I'd have to look it up now. Where these people are so, you know, they're so angry to start with. They're angry, they're full of rage, full of resentment, and that doesn't have anywhere to go. And so that's why they burn down their own neighborhood. That's why they, you know, if you read these articles, some of the articles that after the riot, I think that at least that initial night before last riot, after the verdict came down, or not the verdict, but the thing from the grand jury came down, they were overturning cars and starting fires, and you had all of this kind of thing going on, but they, it didn't have anywhere to go. And it's almost the kind of the same way. If you have resentment, if you have lots of resentment and it's buried, and you, maybe you're aware of it, maybe you're not. A lot of times people aren't aware of it because resentment comes packaged with its own denial mechanism. People become depressed. You know, if it happens on an individual level and you got all this rage, you become depressed, and you know, where you think, oh, it's just normal. The psychiatrist, psychologist, they'll tell you, oh, it's just, everybody gets depressed. It's just normal, it's cyclical or whatever, is what they always say. And it's just the resentment has nowhere to go, and then it comes back on the person that harbors it. And so in the same way, it's almost the same. The rage that they have doesn't have anywhere to go. And of course, the rage ends up ruining their ability to perceive reality, so they can't even, they can listen to this policeman's side of the story and they can't believe it, because they're already locked into the groupthink, you know, the sort of the Ferguson ghetto groupthink, that it has to be a certain way and that's the way it is, and it's unjust, and he killed the 18-year-old, and they want justice, and they're going to get it. And, you know, it's kind of the same way with that Trayvon Martin thing, and it's happened over and over again. The same thing, the same story plays out. It's, you know, it just keeps, same story keeps playing out in different parts of the country, and it's the same, typically, you know, the Rodney King thing, if you remember that. They only showed part of that video, and they kept looping it on television, and people really got upset. And of course, the whole story was he was on some sort of PCP and that they tried using the taser and the taser wasn't phasing him. And they had to protect themselves. So the story happens over and over again. But their perception of reality is wrong. And resentment does that. It ruins your ability to perceive reality, and that's especially true if you won't face your conscience, your enemies with it. So they end up destroying their own neighborhood. You look at it from the outside and it kind of doesn't really make any sense. And it's sort of like, if you want to put it into another context, it's kind of like the little kid throwing a temper tantrum and in his room. And so then he goes in there and he's throwing a temper tantrum and he just tears all of his toys up, tears everything up. That kind of thing. So it doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, intelligence and stupidity and how smart someone is, it has nothing to do. Intellectual ability has nothing to do whatsoever with it doesn't even figure into the equation. Because once resentment and rage are involved, the intelligence part just flies right out the window. The ability to perceive reality objectively flies right out the window. So anyway, let's listen to some more of Joel's comment.
You know, to me, it perpetuates the worldview that most Americans have with regards to Black people. I'm not a bigot, but I say this all the time, you know, whether it's a Walmart worker or a Black person, you know, fast food worker, whatever, it doesn't matter. What your plight in life and your position in life can be changed by yourself. And that's the thing I do not see happening in certain Black communities. And I don't even see the people who do have the education that are Black, namely guys like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, so on and so forth. They're just not seeing it, that if they would actually support good things, you know, and get things, and I don't mean things like good things like UNCF, you know, I'm sure they support that, but go further, you know, instead of saying, it's all because they're Black, which it's not, you know, they need to come out and they need to say things like, it's because of your actions. Take responsibility, Black America. And that's the biggest problem that there is nobody's really willing to take the responsibility. And this goes back towards the quote unquote, you know, the moral downfall of our country. So I just don't get it. You know, in a lot of cases, it's all just a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, the Bible itself says that this is going to happen in the world. And, you know, it just breaks my heart when I see people doing really dumb things. It doesn't really help their agenda. You know, I think the most sane people in this are the people that are probably have the most right to feel wrong. If, for example, if the Ferguson Police Department did use lethal force when they shouldn't have, And that's his parents. His parents were they were saying, don't riot and do the same thing. You know, let's do something that's going to positive. That's going to make a change. And their suggestion was, and I think this is a good suggestion, was that all police officers should be wearing cameras now. And the technology is there now. You can do that. You know, they don't have to have that body, the camera that's on their body on all the time. They just have to have it on whenever they leave the car, which for most officers was probably not going to be very often. So, but, you know, it does really point towards the moral downfall of the world, that because people have this mentality that if it doesn't go their way, they're going to riot. But the fact is if it does go their way, they're going to do the same thing anyway. It goes to the same mentality that happened locally here in Columbus. In fact, this happens to be the week for OSU in that it's usually their final regular season game, and it is this year, and it's with the Michigan Wolverines. And for many, many years, this rivalry has been very strong, and in the 90s, there were several cases where, you know, the Buckeyes just weren't, you know, doing their part to actually win the game. So they were losing constantly under this one coach. Well, the fans themselves, you know, it didn't matter whether they won or if they didn't. If they won, they would look out and seek out cars that had Michigan plates on them and overturn them here in Columbus. They drink, get rowdy, blah, blah, blah. That would happen. Vice versa, they would tear the whole neighborhood up if they lost. You know, so either case, I don't understand that mentality. You know, maybe it's because I'm a moral person, you know, so.
Well, allow me to interrupt once again. Now, you bring up a very good example of idolization. Sports is huge, and it's people idolize the teams, and it is groupthink. They're idolizing the teams, and in the extreme form, it's as you say, they'll tear things up if they lose. Now in Arkansas, to my knowledge, Northwest Arkansas, of course, we have the Razorbacks and whoever they play, and to my knowledge, they've never gotten violent, or there's never been any kind of violence afterwards, although there could be. There easily could be if there was that kind of a rivalry, the extreme kind you're talking about, but because all of the elements are there. You have the groupthink, you have the idolization, kind of the false idol, the false idol of the team. But for whatever reason, it's just cranked up a few notches, to the point where they're, going out and destroying things. But that happens in other cities. That's happened all over the world. So-called soccer hooliganism, that's happened in Europe, in some cities in Europe. So it's idolization. It's everywhere. And of course, if you idolize your team and you got a rivalry, well, what's the rival? The other one's the demon. You know, so I guess you said Michigan State. So Michigan State's the demon. In the Church of Ohio State University, I guess this would be football, maybe, or basketball. Whatever it is, Michigan is the demon. And so you have that kind of, and I'm sure probably Michigan's the other way around. Maybe, I don't know, you know, where Ohio State's the demon, And you know, and but that that and then you kind of got warring religions, warring false gods, warring idols. So it some people can get caught up in that kind of thing, and potentially that should be a warning sign for anybody. If you can get, if you find yourself getting caught up in, let's say sports. Sports is a good one. If you find yourself getting caught up in sports, and your team, you've got your team, and your team wins, and it makes you feel good because you're sort of vicariously living, you know, somehow you're not playing, and you're not even maybe physically capable of playing, but somehow you feel really good because they, you cheered for them and they won. You put your emotional energy into it, and somehow they won, and you get this kind of the good feelings out of it. That's dangerous. And at the same time, the flip side of that, if they lose, it's like you feel down in the dumps, and you know, it's it, but you, you know, it's a strange thing that happens, but it's false idolization. And so that should be a big warning sign for anybody. If you can get caught up in anything, and see, even the language, caught up, what does that mean? You're getting caught up. It's almost like you're, you know, you're getting swept away or caught up into the, you know, some sort of a Ezekiel wheel in the sky or something. Caught up from what? What's catching you up? You know, it's interesting to examine language, because usually the telltale signs are there of what's going on. So, but that should be a warning sign. If something can get you excited like that, even if it's not extreme enough to, even if it's not extreme enough to get you to sort of motivate you to go out and turn cars over and tear up neighborhoods, even if it's that not, if it's not that extreme, if you can be one of these people, and I've got relatives that do this, if you can be one of these people that they're parked around the television and you know, the football game is on, and you know, and I know you've seen people do this, we've all seen people do this, where they just you know, get it, and then either they lose, and then they're, oh, and then they scream as if the person that fumbled the ball could hear them, or if they make the touchdown, they'll, you know, then they cheer, and you know, as if they were the ones that did it. That's not healthy. That is unhealthy. You know, there's something wrong with that. And there's something wrong with that. You think, oh, that's just, it's just sports, and it's just, what people do. Everybody does it. Want to know what's wrong with it? Every time you do that, every time you engage in that, your soul atrophies. So just remember, if something can catch you up, or you get caught up in, or you deliberately catch yourself up in it, your soul is atrophying as you do that. So anyway, let's listen to the remainder of Joel's comment.
But you know, the poor grand jury in this case, they can't win. You know, they probably in their heart of hearts made the right decision, and in my opinion, they probably did. From things I've heard about the case over the last year or so, it just, that just convinces me that they made the right decision. But you know, there's always going to be people that are going to be disagreeing, and rather than disagree and be constructive, they're just disagreeing and being foolhardy, and they think that tearing things up is going to help things. Well, it's not. So anywho, take care, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Yeah, I agree with you. I think from what I've heard, the grand jury made the right decision. But these people, you've had these outside agitators. You've got these outside agitators that are willing to pounce on anything like this that happens. And they did it in the thing with the Trayvon Martin down in Florida, whenever that was. They did it with that. There's a long history of this. If you go back there's a Tawana Brawley in New York, and I don't remember. I'd actually have to look the details of that up. But they made a giant deal out of that. And they've done this over and over in New York City, by the way, over the years. They'll take a case and they'll just make a huge thing out of it, and it's the facts be damned, and then they'll come out later after people have died and what have you, and neighborhoods have been destroyed, and then they'll come out later, and then the truth finally comes out. The truth always comes out. Oh well, it was made up. It wasn't true. Same way with they did the same thing a few years ago with that the thing down in North Carolina. They claimed that the football or the sports team, whatever it was, there was a thing with a black prostitute or something, and they tried to, I don't remember the details about that anymore. But then they came out, finally after they destroyed people's lives, and they, eventually the truth came out, and there wasn't anything to the story. It was just kind of made up. So these things, there's a long history of this that just goes on over and over again. And there is no political solution to it. There really isn't. There is no political solution to it. And it's out of control. So my solution would be, if you live in a place like that where you think that could possibly happen, get the hell out. You're living with people. They look like people, and it's not just because they're black. There are plenty of people around us. They look like normal people, and they're acting like normal people. But when it comes right down to it, they're not. There's just this thin veneer of behavior that makes them seem civilized, when in fact they're animals. They're not. They're not civilized. And all you have to do is just agitate whatever's in there a little bit, the resentment that's in there, and then the bad behavior comes out. You want to get away from those kind of people. I'd be getting the hell away from those kind of people, out of those sort of neighborhoods. But the idolization thing is interesting, because it's all around us. And and it's not only you think, well, sports is a positive outlet, and that's what I always hear. Well, you got to root for something or whatever. I've heard people use that as the excuse. It's a false idol. And you can say, oh, it's a positive false idol. Well, what about the rival team? They're the demons. You're making them the devil. And a couple of other things. How many people demonize Walmart? Lots of people demonize Walmart. It's part of the groupthink. How many people, of course you always have to, you start talking politics, you always have to demonize white supremacy. There was a, in this Ferguson thing, if you look on the Drudge Report right now, they burned the black church, one of the black churches down in Ferguson. It's primarily, I guess it was a black church. They burned it down, and so the pastor's accusing white supremacists of setting the fires. They burned their own church. They burned their own town. They burned their own neighborhood. Oh, it's white supremacists. They're the demon. They did it. And they weren't even there. to my knowledge. So do you have a demon that you resent? Even if it's resentable, do you have a demon that you resent and you think it's, you kind of enjoy resenting the demon? That locks you in to the groupthink. You know, and people have this idea that somehow that somebody violates them. You know, your parent did you wrong, or the society's doing you wrong because of the color of your skin or whatever. And somehow you think that sort of justifies your resentment. But once you resent, you find yourself with two wrong choices. You either go along to get along, or you rebel and you try to do the opposite. The people in Ferguson are born into a system where they resent, and then they've got two wrong choices. So they can either continue to live in Ferguson and take the handouts, or what's the other choice? They try to rebel and tear down the neighborhood, and that seems to be the rebellion, but it's just more of the same. Either way, they're separated from who they could have been. And it wasn't the violation. If someone does you wrong, and you don't, you know, where you go wrong is when you resent. That's when you, the state of your being, that's when the state changes, is once you resent. The actual violation doesn't change the state. It only happens when you resent. And then once you resent, that's when your state has changed. That's when you've committed the sin. The violation, if somebody violates you, somebody does you wrong somehow, somebody can steal something from you or whatever it is, whatever they provoke you to do, they try to bully you. If you don't resent them, maybe you can punch them in the nose or whatever you have to do, but if you don't resent, or maybe you just avoid them, but if you don't resent them, you're still who you started out to be. But if you do resent, you're changed, you're not in the same state as you were before. You've lost something. So it's not the violation that causes you to lose whatever it is. It's not the bad parent that causes you to lose the relationship you have with your Creator. It's the resentment that does it. And resentment is an inferior response. People won't let go of it. And if you won't let go of it, you eventually, if you keep clinging to it, you suffer the consequences. And you deserve the consequences that it brings. It's very simple. So, anyway, I need to get this put together and uploaded. I'm going to try to get out of here. Once my break is over, get out of here and go on home and start taking care of errands, doing things. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week. And if you're in the United States, hope you have a great Thanksgiving Day. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.